Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:23 British Summer Time. Today is April 11th. Today in China, the market was a little bit weaker. But in Japan, the Nikkei was stronger by about just under 2%. And the yen against the dollar is hovering here just below 100 yen to the dollar. And that's a psychological area. And it's not unexpected to see a little bit of a pause in the region of a big round number like that. And we've referred to that type of activity as roundophobia for really quite a long time, particularly in the chart seminar. But considering the conviction of the Bank of Japan and the new Japanese administration in weakening the yen, attempting to kickstart growth and do whatever they can to break out of the deflationary cycle, then the 100 yen level is unlikely to act as any kind of medium-term area of support for the yen, and we could see an additional weakening below it. And when we look at the yen versus a number of other currencies, then the fact that when you look at what's been happening with JGBs, because yields are at incredibly low levels, and when we compare the actual level of yield that one is getting on a 10-year JGB and compare it even to US Treasuries, then there is really quite a significant gap. And if you're managing a pension fund, or you were sitting there with your investments in Japan, and the government was saying that they are going to do whatever it takes to get an inflation cycle moving in the economy, then you'd be looking at the value of your savings and thinking, well, this is not good news. And leaving them in government bonds is unlikely to provide a return over the long term when a 2% inflation rate is the government's target and the central bank target. Therefore, one of the arguments that has long been used to support the JGB market is that upwards of 90% of Japan's debt is held internally. But the question is, who holds it internally? And obviously pension funds hold it. And there's a significant amount of JGBs held by the banking sector. And the Bank of Japan is swelling its balance sheet, so it's going to be holding more of them. And the postal system holds a significant number of JGBs. And of course, by the postal system, that implies regular savers. And that means that this stimulus is being funded by the savings of the country. And there's obviously going to be a percentage of people that are going to say, well, that's not good enough, and they're going to start thinking about how to capture not only a higher yield, but the depreciating value of the currency. And by doing that, they're going to be investing abroad. And therefore, it is interesting that as yields in JGBs have been rising, and it is important to put that rise in context, it's a definite dynamic relative to the type of action that we've had in the last year. But if we were to look at the entire 20 plus year pattern of yield contraction in Japan, then the move that we've had in the last week isn't anything out of character with what we've seen previously. And really, for 10-year yields, a sustained move above 2% would really be required to break the progression of lower rally highs in terms of the yield and suggest that supply dominance has really taken control. And we're quite a long way from that. And considering that this is really only the beginning of the quantitative easing program, we can anticipate that the Bank of Japan will be buying up these things as long as there's any kind of downward pressure on prices. The Bank of Japan will step in and start to buy them. So it's a very tense environment from the perspective of the fixed income. When we look at currencies, the South African rand is breaking upwards today against the yen, and the South African 10-year yields approximately 6%. And South African 10-year yields hit a new low in here today and extended their medium-term contraction. And the Australian dollar was as high today as 105.82 against the US dollar and extended its advance against the yen. And the New Zealand dollar was breaking upwards today to challenge its 2007 or 2008 peak against the US dollar and improving even further against the yen. So what it seems to be happening is that the yen carry trade playbook has been taken out of the bottom drawer and is what people are starting to look at once more. And the yen carry trade was really the leveraged traders' funding mechanism of choice prior to the financial crisis. And right now, we have the Bank of Japan printing yen like it was going out of fashion, and a virtual surety that there's going to be a government mandate for a weaker currency, and there is ample opportunity to invest elsewhere at a significant yield differential. So we can anticipate that the yen carry trade is going to be around for the foreseeable future, and that is certainly helping to stoke investment demand in a number of different areas. The Malaysian market today broke upwards to new highs, and while if one looks at it over the last 5 years, it doesn't have a terribly good record of sustaining upward breaks, but in the absence of a downward dynamic, we would have to give it the benefit of the doubt. And the Singapore market continues to hover here in the upper side of its respective range. And the Hang Seng has steadied here in the region of 22,000. And the ASEAN markets, more generally, have been really very steady indeed. And the corrective phase for the majority of them has been limited to a ranging phase, which is allowing the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average to be unwound. Following upward dynamics in European banking sectors, or European banking shares, over the last few days, we've seen an additional improvement in most European stock markets in here today, and the majority were up, but most of them less than 1%. And yesterday, the S&P 500 hit a new all-time high, and it extended that advance in here today, finishing up on the day 5 points, which is about a third of a percent, and it's closing in on the next potential area of resistance, which would be the 1600 area. The Dow Jones also continues to extend its medium-term uptrend and continues to hit new highs. And provided they continue to hold their progressions of higher reaction lows, we would have to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the current momentum. In the commodity markets, gold pulled back really very sharply yesterday. And even though the rumor that Cyprus has applied to sell 10 tons of gold spooked the market yesterday and was subsequently denied by the Cypriot government, it doesn't really change the fact that people are nervous with regard to gold at present. And it was a bit steadier in here today, but certainly didn't unwind the downward dynamic from yesterday. And the ETF holdings of gold, which are in excess of 4,000 tons, are still continuing to contract. And we won't really have an indication that demand is really returning to dominance until that index starts to turn around. Meanwhile, gold continues to range here above the 1540 to 1550 area and is closing out today at 1564. But it needs to do more than that. And most particularly, it needs to break the almost 6 month progression of lower rally highs in order to really convince investors that demand has returned to dominance here at the lower side of a more than 18 month range. Palladium was a bit steadier in here today, and it is also firming at the lower side of its range. And platinum is currently holding around the 1530 area, which is close to the lower side of its respective range. And government bonds, which have been unwinding their overbought condition over the last few days, were a little bit steadier in here today. And one of the more important movers was in the energy markets, where Brent crude has unwound the last 3 days of gains and is sitting right back on its lows. And it's pulled back below the $105 area for the first time in over a year. And that is bringing it back down towards the $100 area. There was an article I was reading today, and it was talking about where Asia is now sourcing more of its oil from Dubai and paying Dubai prices rather than Brent. And because of the shale oil boom in the US, that there is less of a call for Brent-denominated imports. And that is reducing demand for North Sea contracts, which is removing a potential source of demand from that market. And that is allowing spreads relative to other crude contracts to compress once more. And that could see the differential on global markets starting to pull back. And that is very, very positive news indeed from the perspective of the global economy, because higher oil prices represent a significant headwind. And it also removes the potential for a spike in oil prices, which has been a cause of recessions over on just about every occasion. So lower oil prices are certainly good news in here. And natural gas hit a high today of $4.18 and closed out today at $4.17. And it's not only stabilizing above $4, but improving. And this is rather pivotal, because it got down to, I think, a low of $1.92 last year. And that represented a significant oversupply of the commodity. And following that event, the supply started to contract. And because of those low prices, it encouraged a lot more people to consume natural gas. So utilities and chemical companies and energy companies and steel companies have been increasing their usage of natural gas, and that oversupply has been eroded, and that is allowing prices to rise once more. And that's a good thing, because it encourages more supply to be brought into the market. And as long as it takes for that new supply to enter the market, then we'll see prices rise until that does happen. And $4 was a widely touted break-even point for a good portion of the unconventional gas. So that is also positive from the perspective of those types of companies that benefit from higher natural gas prices. And they have been hit particularly hard over the last 3 years, but we're starting to see that some base formation has taken place, and we're seeing an increasing number starting to break upwards. And Rex Energy, which is about 50% oil and 50% gas, was breaking out of a 3 to 4 year range in here today. So when we look at the bigger picture, there's a lot to be positive about. And the liquidity-fueled environment that we've become used to over the last number of years is still very much in evidence. And the Bank of Japan is right at the forefront of increasing liquidity, but the Fed is still buying over $80 billion worth of mortgage bonds every month. And with the continued stress on the European economy, we can anticipate that the ECB will not be shy in making as much money available at the discount window as is needed. And that means that we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, provided we continue to see that higher reaction lows are still in evidence. And when we do see pullbacks, provided something finds support in the region of the 200-day moving average, that is likely to be an entry opportunity. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I wish all the best to all of you.